Welcome to In Their Words, where extraordinary stories of human compassion come to life. Today, we're diving into the remarkable journey of Chris Prince, a punk rock Santa that proves that true heroism comes in the most unexpected packages. When a close friend's life hung in the balance, facing a critical kidney condition, Chris didn't just offer sympathy. He offered something far more powerful, his own kidney. Stepping up with the heart of a rock star and the soul of a lifesaver, Chris underwent testing and became the perfect donor match. Supported by the incredible transplant team at UPMC in Central PA, he transformed a personal challenge into a mission of hope. But Chris didn't stop at donation. He turned his experience into a passionate platform, using his unique voice to amplify the critical message of organ donation. These donations are just as important as what doctors and nurses do, Chris says. It's a wonderful family and community supporting each other. It's all about giving the gift of life. Get ready for a story that'll rock your understanding of what it means to be a hero.
Hi, my name is Chris Prince. So about, 5 years or so ago, 4 or 5 years ago, our close friend Jimmy had a medical incident. And it's a super, super rare thing that happens to people. They don't really know a whole lot about it. And he was hospitalized, he was put into a coma, and it turned out that this particular illness he had was one that just shut his kidneys down. Like, it completely attacked his kidneys. So he was in the hospital for a few weeks. He had to go through a dialysis, and it was really, really tough for us. He's my wife's best friend. He's her partner. And so he had to go through all these tests and, dialysis and all the things we used to do together. We couldn't really do anymore. We were we've been on a trivia team together for 7 years, I think. And so he couldn't eat the same stuff anymore. He couldn't drink. And it was a really, really tough thing to watch him go through. So last year, I think in February, he had gone through all the tests he needed to go through to get approved for a transplant. And I was just the first to step into the ring. If I didn't pass any of the tests that needed to be done, my wife was going to step in. And if she didn't pass, then his partner was going to step in. But it just so happened that I think it was last January or February, Jimmy came by our house with literature on UPMC. And I read through it all. I did some actual research on what it looks like, what it involved, the fatality rates were, and things like that. And I was really, really comfortable with everything I had read about it. And so using the little pamphlet he gave me, I called UPMC, talked to Jackie, did all the little phone interviews and stuff first. And I felt really comfortable with it after talking to everybody. And it just so happened that we were a tissue match. I'm a universal blood donor type. And so it just worked out. And somehow, despite all the abuses I put my body through in my teens and 20s, nothing was permanently damaged. So here we are. Yeah. So I'm a huge advocate for this because it's so much easier than I think people realize. They do a phone interview with you, just kind of basic background, medical history type stuff. Your habits, things like, are you a smoker? Are you a drinker? Do you do any recreational drugs and things like that? And then you talk to the social worker, UPMC's social worker. I think there's two of them. And they just kind of make sure that you're doing it for all the right reasons, that you haven't been coerced into doing it, that you haven't accepted money for it, that you're in a good frame of mind to accept the potential consequences of doing something like this. And then after that, they start to schedule tests. So I think the first thing I had to do was I had to get my blood drawn, which when I started this process, I've long been absolutely terrified of hypodermic needles. So just the fact that I went and got several vials of blood drawn right off the bat. After I did that, I was fully committed. I'm all right, they're going to stick me a lot more. I got to get used to this. And I think my fear of hypodermic needles is pretty much over at this point because I've been poked so many times. So I did a blood draw. And after that initial blood draw, it depends on what those tests come back with. I had a weird glucose thing going on. So I had to do a glucose test next, which I didn't love it. You have to get blood drawn like 3 times in an hour after drinking this like super, super sugary, like hummingbird juice. It was disgusting. And after I passed the glucose test, there were like another few blood draws, I guess. But eventually what happens is you schedule these days to go in to meet everybody and talk to the surgeons that work on patients. You talk to your donor advocate. You talk face to face with the social worker and like you do a really, really, really in-depth analysis. And they go over the risks with you. You have to be willing to accept that there's a possibility that you'll die from it. And then there's like a load of tests. They do this thing called the glofill test, where I think in one day I got like 22 vials of blood drawn. And then the next day I did the glofill test. And they test you for everything, everything that they can possibly test you for. They run tests on your blood. So you do a glofill test where they wrap your arm up. They stick a needle in, they draw a few things of blood, and then they inject a radioactive substance into your blood. And then you got to walk around with like this little needle poking out of your arm, and they wrap it up. And you have to get an EKG done and chest x-ray because they want to make sure that you have 2 kidneys to begin with. So that's super helpful. And I had to get an extra EEG because I have really, really low blood pressure. And so like the first test showed that my heart at a resting heart rate can get down to like 46 beats per minute, which is basically dead. So they had to do a sonogram on my heart to make sure that everything was fine. So you're walking around with this needle after they do all these tests, and then you have to go back to the dude who does the glofill, and he draws a few more vials of blood. But what can happen, and what happened to me, is my vein dried up. And no matter how he moved the tourniquet around or anything, he could not get another drop out. So he had to go to the other arm and stick me there. Oh, they also do this thing where they shove you into an MRI machine and they do an iodine test where they like inject iodine into you and like flush your entire system. That was super weird because you get like really, really hot and lasts for a second. It's really wild. But once you get through all of that, if you pass all of those tests, it's basically good to go. And so it boils down to scheduling a time for the surgery to happen. So number one, the donor advocate I had, her name is Jackie Stifler. It's impossible for me to speak high enough about the team that I had. Jackie Stifler is my donor advocate, completely and totally amazing. My social worker was Amy Zook, who is just one of the kindest people I've ever met. My surgeon was Dr. Menon. I met Dr. Gupta too, who was Jimmy's surgeon. Yeah. They make sure that you are as prepared as you can be. And I gotta say, I don't know that you can fully prepare for this. And I guess I'll get to that later on. But the day before the surgery, you gotta clean yourself out. So just kind of like preparing for a colonoscopy. Whatever that stuff is, magnesium citrate. So this is what happened to me. So the day before our initial surgery, I was supposed to take the magnesium citrate at like 2 o'clock, and I did. And 10 minutes after I took it, Jackie called me and told me that there was a problem, that Jimmy had an abscess of some sort on his knee, and they didn't know if it was infected, because if it was infected, then he could not go into surgery. So about an hour later, our initial surgery was canceled, which meant that I had to do a system flush for no real reason, which my sense of humor is kind of perverse sometimes. So I thought it was hilarious. And it gave me, you know, like a day or two off of work anyways, while my system flushed itself. Anyway, so like a week later, like we were good to go. Turns out Jimmy's knee was fine. So I did the system flush. We had to be at the hospital like 5:30 in the morning. So I think at 4 o'clock in the morning, I woke up and I had to do like very specific wash. They give you like this pre-prepared like prep sponge, and you have to gently rub the area and wash the area that they do the surgery in. We got to the hospital about 5:30. They wheeled us back into the back room at about 5:45. Jimmy and I were like right next to each other. And that's when like the poking and prodding begins. So if by this point you're not used to needles, like you definitely are at this point. So you get like shaved down and they pop that little thing for the drip into your hand, which is super freaky. I think I got a few more blood draws. They had to do like a little pricky thing on me, which I didn't like at all. at some point, they start to give you a little bit of happy juice because things start to get like really fuzzy. I'll never forget like being wheeled back into the operating room. The two nurses that wheeled me back, one of them was crying. And she said like it happens every time they get a donor because it just touched her, I guess. And I'm like super loopy on happy juice at this point. But I remember like going into the operating room theater, super bright, couldn't believe how bright it was. And they wheeled me in, and it was like one of the doctors there told me it was going to feel like pit crew in like a NASCAR race. And that's exactly what it was like. I've never seen such coordinated movement so fast in all of my life. It's really something special to behold. So they get you up on the table. You kind of get like strapped down, for lack of a better word. And there's just people like all over you, like right on top of you. And by that time, the happy juice is really kicking in. And that's it. Lights out. Don't remember anything after that. And then, I don't know, it was a few hours later. It took some time with me because what they did was when they went in to get my kidney, they noticed that my spleen had a lot of scar tissue on it. And I think, I mean, my best guess is when I was like 18 or 19, I got jumped by five guys and they beat the hell out of me. And I think that's what the scarring was on my insides was from that. I can't think of any other way that that would have happened to me. But I woke up in the ICU recovery. I felt like I was frozen in place. I was in a little bit of pain, so they were giving me some morphine. But I was in and out of consciousness an awful lot. I didn't really quite know what was happening. I was like in a very sleepy state. I got wheeled up to my room, put in bed, and I think the most shocking thing about it, and really this is the part that they can't prepare you for, because I think every individual's super different. I have a pretty fairly high pain tolerance. I've never felt pain like that in my life, partially because it compromises your core. So any type of movement you do, you never realize how much your midsection has to do with your movement. And it felt like I had been hit by a small car. I don't know how else to describe it, but I could barely hold myself up. I could barely get out of bed. I remember the first walk they took me on. They take you on a walk pretty quickly to make sure that you're not clotting up with blood. It felt like I was 95 years old. It was something to get used to for sure. So I slept an awful lot that first 36 hours. I know Anne, Jimmy's partner, would visit me, and I know that Jimmy's family visited me and that my wife's family visited and my parents were there. And I don't really remember a whole lot. I was slipping in and out of consciousness a lot. And I think part of that was because I was in a pretty fair amount of pain, but I don't know that it's like that for everybody. I know Jimmy, I've heard that it's more painful on the donor than it is on the recipient. Jimmy's recovery was not really all that bad. Now, I will say this too, despite all of that, for anyone who considers doing this, it is 100% worth it. The outlook that I have on life now is, I don't know, things are different. It's a life-changing experience in more than one way, and it's a really great experience. In like my younger years, I had some struggles with depression. I think I've oscillated in and out of various degrees of depression for, you know, a good portion of my life. And I don't think that this was any different. The first few days I was home, I was still getting used to trying to become mobile again. And as someone who's never had to rely on anyone before, who's never felt weak or incapacitated, who's, you know, for a mid-40s guy is in pretty excellent health, all things considered, because they won't let you do this if you're not super healthy to begin with. I struggled for a little while with not being able to do a lot of things, with needing help getting out of bed, with, feeling somewhat useless. And there was a time for a few weeks where I felt, I don't want to say I felt nihilistic, because I think that that tends to have some fairly negative connotations with it. But there, I definitely had found myself getting pretty ticked off easily over things that I considered peccadilloes, like just like little nitpicky things. And I would get really irritated by small nuances that shouldn't bother anybody. And I remember my wife and I were going to hike a part of the Appalachian Trail, and I was being chippy in the car and I was being critical about things. And it's like just stupid stuff, like people driving like idiots on the road, which we deal with all the time. But I was like extreme about it. And I remember my wife was like, what is going on with you? There's like an edge to you right now. And I think, and so we kind of workshopped a little bit. And I think what happened was I felt like for the one of the first times in my life, I had done something super significant. Like I felt like somebody. I felt that after doing something like this, there's all these minor things that human beings surround themselves with, and these just stupid, like petty nonsense in our day to day. And I think it just started to really affect me, because I was like, for me, like the camera pulls out to like this omniscient bird's eye view, things just seemed pointless at times. And I think that I just found myself being really critical about petty squabbles and petty behavior and things like that, because to me, it felt like there was so much more that we all have in common, that we all like share as a brothered sisterhood of humanity, that I started to get like really, like not full-blown nihilist, but like kind of like misanthropic, really, which was bizarre because I've always considered myself a humanist. It took some time to work through that. And I think, you know, by like the end of July, about 2.5 months after surgery or so, I think I was starting to feel myself again. That was a tough thing to get through. The first week I was home from surgery, I felt just overwhelmed, man, with emotions. Like I cried every day for, I don't know, like 3 weeks. I was overcome with emotion. I was overcome with just how amazing modern medicine is and how amazing the people who are RNs, LPNs, surgeons, medical doctors, all of it. Like I was just in awe of the care I received and the people who surrounded me. So I like bought bouquets of flowers for Jackie and the team at the Brady Building. And I bought a bouquet of flowers for the nurses on the fourth floor of the hospital and for the ER nurses too, just because I was overwhelmed with like gratitude that I got out on the other side, and I felt really good about medicine and the technology we have and the good, deep good that medicine does. So I think once I got through that like really, really tough period where I felt not myself, I started thinking, well, there's got to be something more I can do, right? And there's got to be something where I can shine a light on how meaningful this experience is. So I reached out to Jackie and I was like, hey, do you guys have like a fundraising thing or something where like I can like get people to donate to the Brady Building? And she sent me a link to the Pinnacle Foundation and was like, this is just the basic hub for donations. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, I hadn't quite figured out what I wanted to do yet, but it was nice to have access to that once I figured it out. And in November at Cumberland Valley High School, we do this thing called the CVU Day. And I got Jimmy to come in to school with me for a day. And what CVU Day is like these little workshops that kids sign up for. And, you know, some of it's like career-based, some of it's hobby-based, some of it's, you know, just information-based. And so Jimmy and I did a presentation to 6 groups of kids, like, you know, I don't know, between 8 and 15 kids in each session about what our story was like and what it felt like and what it looked like, and got to show some fun pictures and things like that. And it was during that time where I was like, God, you know what? Every year I do this thing called Punk Rock Santa for a thing called the Market of Curiosities that Dave and Sarah, who are the owners of a little store called Miss Ruth's Time Bomb in Carlisle, they do this thing called the Market of Curiosities every year. And it's this huge, like they fill the Carlisle Expo Center with vendors, and there's beer and there's food and people selling really cool stuff. And there's a circus normally. And I don't know, it was like 6 years ago that they had put out an APB for someone who had all the clearances you need to be a teacher, really. And I was like, well, I got all that. But they put out an APB looking for someone to play a character of Punk Rock Santa. And I was like, well, I've been into punk since I was 15 years old. The first punk band I ever got into was Minor Threat. I think I was like 15. My cousin turned me onto them. And that was basically the end of my normalcy, which really had started in 1987, I guess, when I found Iron Maiden. But anyways, that's beside the point. There's this evolution from heavy metal to punk. Anyway, so like, because I was punk rock fan, I was like, well, this is a perfect opportunity to, I don't know, like raise money and see if I can get people interested and invested in learning about kidney donation and getting interested in donating to the Pinnacle Foundation for people who need help. And so I ran the idea by Dave and Sarah, and they were like all chips in immediately. So by the day of the Market of Curiosities, they had already set up like, I had like a little rudimentary QR code, and they had gone like beyond that. And I don't know, the rest was history. I just felt like it was a perfect opportunity to garner interest. And it like far exceeded any expectations I had. Like when I found out how much had been donated through the credit card things, and I had something like $400, $500, $600 cash on me too. It was like overwhelming. And so I just figured that that character, who I don't know, is like this alter ego of mine. It's like an alter ego in a way. Like the punk rock thing is absolutely me, but like the outgoing extroverted part of that character is not me at all. I'm a pretty quiet guy. I keep, you know, I'm a bookworm and a homebody and kind of a hermit, but like punk rock Santa is like this weird alter ego, like extroverted alter ego of mine. And I've been doing the character for a while, and I figured just like with how people have responded to that character in the past. Like there are people who have told Dave and Sarah that the only Santa their child knows is punk rock Santa, which is like having something like get completely out of hand. Like learning something like that is like, this is ridiculous. This is like the weirdest thing on the planet for people to latch onto, but they've always like responded really well to it. And I've made a lot of really fun connections at the Market of Curiosities doing that character. But I figured like with the extroverted nature of the character that comes out with the help of bourbon at points, I just figured it was a perfect opportunity to raise awareness and to garner interest in UPMC. I have a bleeding heart, and when it comes to helping people in need and helping people who don't have access to things that help them, and the fact that UPMC, that the Pinnacle Foundation provides those services, that makes me even more interested in it, because I think that a strong society takes care of its most vulnerable individuals. I 100% believe that. March of 2022, my aunt, who was the aunt that I was closest to, she was married to my uncle, who we've all called Buzz his entire life, but they were only like 11 years older than I am. My aunt was diagnosed with cancer, and the tumors that were on her lungs were too close to major veins or something, so it was inoperable, and it spread to her brain, and I would have done anything to save her. I would have donated a part of my brain, I would have donated a part of my lung, and she was originally given like 10 months to live. So when this opportunity came up, I thought, shit, man, I can't save my aunt, but I might be able to save someone else. She died in November of this year. It was tough. She died the day I left visiting her. But I know I talked to her before she got really, really, really bad, obviously. When I got approved for it, I talked to her and I told her that she's the inspiration as to why I'm doing this. I mean, obviously I was doing it for Jimmy too, but I couldn't save my aunt. So this was like a way for me to save someone else or to help someone else. And about 2 months before she died, sometime in September, she was in the hospital because things got bad. And my cousin messaged me and she said that Tucker, my aunt's name was Tucker. This is her right here. I keep her right there. My aunt was bragging about me to all the RNs that were helping her. So my family is all chips in, my side of the family. My mom was super supportive.
As we wrap up today's incredible story, Chris leaves us with a powerful call to action. He urges listeners to support transplant teams by donating to the UPMC Pinnacle Foundation and to continue spreading awareness about the life-changing impact of organ donation. Every share, every conversation can be a step towards saving lives. To our incredible listeners, thank you for joining us on this journey of hope and humanity. We hope you enjoyed this episode of In Their Words, Don't forget to like, rate, and review us. And from all of us here, happy holidays. Until next time, this is In Their Words.